Talk Live.
Radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number. That's 603-283-6160. You can call in with whatever's on your mind. We already have a caller on the line, and with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Jay Noon,
and Riley.
And let's go to our phone calls and thoughts. And that number, if you want to join in on the conversation and bring up whatever is on your mind, again, is 603-283-6160. But we have Charles in New Hampshire. Charles, what's on your mind?
Well, basically, I'm calling in to talk about the Sununu Youth Center lawsuit, YDC lawsuit. That's one of my good friends, David Meehan, is going to trial for, and I'm John Doe number 9 in that lawsuit, and you know, just being there changed the trajectory of my life.
And let me clarify for the listeners: the Sununu Detention Center is Chris Sununu Youth Detention Center, and it's a place in New Hampshire where they would keep. Was it only boys or boys and girls?
It was boys and girls.
Yeah, so yes. It's like a juvenile detention center, basically, in New Hampshire. I think it's still run, but there have been tons, like, I believe thousands of people that have come out and said that they were sexually abused there or even just beaten and stuff like that. So, and you say that you were there as a young person?
Yeah, I was there from 1992 to 1997. Hmm. Before that, I was in the YDSU.
How old were you at the time?
I was 11 okay. to 15 years old.
Okay.
And it was tough. You know, I was subjected to physical and sexual abuse, broken bones.
Oh my God.
You know, at some point, you know, I tried to take my own life. I think I was 14 or 15, just to try to get out of the year or so that I had been in solitary confinement. They were locking us. They'd lock us in solitary confinement with nothing but our underwear and a blanket. And if we talked, they'd come and beat us up. They'd open our windows up from the outside. So all the cold air would go inside there. You'd just be in there freezing. And they didn't want us to talk. It was kind of the norm for them to beat children or do things to emasculate them. The system knew what was happening. Every employee there knew that it was an abusive environment. It was systemic. The Attorney General's office knew. In fact, it was in the union leader throughout the 90s and the 2000s. State reps brought the abuse to the public, the Attorney General's office, and to the Attorney General's office. I just want to cite a couple of the dates that we got out of the union leader archives. On August 14, 2019, Michael Conley and Jane Young, they cite that there's going to be a comprehensive investigation of YDC. The union leader on November 21st, 2000, a state rep cites 15 to 20 new complaints of abuse. On April 20th, 2001, Ann Larney, which I believe worked for the Attorney General's office, cites abuse. On April 8th, 2001, state rep Patricia Dowling, and Donald Shemingway, I think he was also a state rep, cites that the abuse investigation results will be in 30 days. I remember there was another December 17, 2001. Gene Shaheen is cited in an article where they're talking about the issues at YDC. And on December 17th, Phil McLaughlin, I think of that same year, 2000, cites that YDC is under investigation for child abuse.
And why would it take over a decade? Why would it take so long if they were investigating and years are going by?
Well, this is the weird thing. In 2002, the Disability Rights Center, to 2010, they did a comprehensive investigational IDC, and they cited systemic abuse. Kelly Ayotte was the attorney general at that time. Kelly Ayotte's looking for support right now as to be the New Hampshire governor.
Yeah.
She took no action the entire time.
Whoa.
You know, if people are watching the Dave Meehan trial, it's on WMUR. It's been on for the last week or two. Wayne Eigerbrot and Virgil Bossom, one worked for the State Police and Trainings Council. The other one worked for the Internal Affairs Department. They said that they referred multiple cases for criminal prosecution. Another lady, Rochelle Edmark, testified that when she worked for the Internal Affairs Department, she wrote over 150 abuse complaints and investigated them, and all the reports are missing. You know, so it's weird that the AG's office and the state police, although they're citing these throughout the years, investigation, nothing ever transpired. Now, everything that I've told you about abuse, I can swear that under the pains and penalties of law. As far as this is concerned, it's my belief that there's a Kids for Cash scheme going on in the state of New Hampshire that's been going on for years.
Wow.
Kids that are sent to YDC and kids that are taken away from their parents, they don't receive a jury trial. So if you're a delinquent kid that catches a misdemeanor, the criminal statute says you can only be punished for up to 1 year. Kids are sent to YDC, which is a juvenile detention center. The Sununu Youth Center is a juvenile detention center.
Mm-hmm.
I was sentenced there for four misdemeanors for my minority until I was 18 years old. So from 12 to 18, I was going to receive a 6-year sentence for misdemeanors. It's unheard of, without a jury trial.
And without due process of law. That's another thing that Leah Cushman's committee is investigating and has been talked about, is this fact that they are without due process of law because they're doing these things, just like you said, without a jury trial, but without a court of record. And a court of record is multiple elements. So it must be a judge that's impartial.
Yes.
And the judge is not impartial because, as many of us know, and in fact, I'd really like to find the evidence so we can draw this conclusion in some kind of simple 10-minute presentation. But the Judicial Pension Fund gets all kinds of money based on the performance of DCYF to essentially assess children, steal children, put them in the, you know, in the foster home, put them in these, you know, studies, all this stuff.
Maybe it'd be as simple as just like pulling some FOIA requests about the Judicial Pension Fund. Or requesting them, not pulling them.
Well, maybe.
I mean, how does our Constitution provide for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness when you can take someone's children without or liberty interests without any type of due process?
Right.
What I believe is that they're tapping into Title 42 of the United States Code and Title 20 and the Social Security Act. They're receiving federal funding. Federal grants, a lot of federal grants. So there's really no incentive to give children back to their parents. There's no incentive to not send kids to these institutions, because if you read the federal title and the grants, they don't just pay for, you know, to feed the child and to put clothes on these delinquent, at-risk, neglected children. They also pay for the institution of the foster care and the delinquent system, which is in essence the court clerks, the judiciary, the guardian ad litem, and even the attorneys. So when you ask yourself, how has it been so many years that so many kids have been raped and abused? Well, it's simple. There was no incentive. There was no incentive to tell an abuse, because if that abuse came up in audit. Now we know that in order to receive federal funding, the feds have mandated audits. The head of DHHS, the head of DCYF, in order for them to send off to money to the Secretary of State or to the Attorney General's office or to the U.S. Attorney General's office asking for federal funding, there has to be audits. Who was signing off on these audits that there was no abuse? Who was hiding the abuse?
It was just so commonplace that, like, I'm not from New Hampshire, but I've lived here for 3 years, and I've heard so many people tell me that, oh, well, they either were there like you and actually were being abused, and they know tons of other people that went through the same thing, or just that everybody knew about it. Like, there's people who they had to tour it for college that have told me that just, like, on the tour, it was, like, the people giving the tour were just talking about it, like, openly. And it's just, it's something that I hear about constantly, like, everyone knew about it. And you're giving all this, these examples of government people, including Jane Young, who's the FBI prosecutor or something like that. Well, yes. And all these, well, is she FBI? I don't remember. She was part of the prosecution.
She's the U.S. attorney.
Yeah, U.S. attorney.
She's the U.S. attorney right now.
And she's like the top one. Well, she and then also the state reps and everybody were talking about investigating it. It shouldn't be that hard. You go in there and you see what's happening. It's like, it shouldn't be that hard. So many people knew about this. It's just, if an audit is happening, is it not like a third party? Is it just like the actual people who run the place saying, yep, everything's fine? That's not what an audit means. It's just shocking that this went on.
In all actuality, the New Hampshire State Police and the Attorney General's office should really be on trial right now. Because you can't cite the union leader 7 times that we're investigating child abuse and nothing ever transpires. And you have over 1,400 kids right now that have lawsuits, residents of the Sununu Youth Center. So what were they doing? There's guys that are indicted. You know, there's an old saying, you can indict a ham and cheese sandwich.
Yep.
You can be indicted for just about anything. And they've only indicted 11 people.
Wow.
It should be, go ahead.
It just sounds like the people calling themselves government of New Hampshire are all about hiding things from the public and not doing anything about the abuse.
Yeah.
It seems like every institution, whether it's a government or a church, is all about hiding abuse. They're not about exposing it to the public. Maybe they just want to make it seem like New Hampshire is a nice, clean place and it's rural country living. It's a nice, laid-back area. It's all clean and pure. But if you look under the surface, like Charles is pointing out, there's a lot of disgusting nonsense going on under the surface.
And it's not just New Hampshire. This is happening everywhere that the federal government has its financial tentacles. Because just like Charles is stating, and we've talked about before, Mike Gill, he called into the show. He talked about this. Claire, I forget Claire's last name here, but any Claire
Best,
that's right. She called in last week. And basically mentioned a similar thing. And the example is, if you look at Ghislaine Maxwell doing 20 years in prison for basically solicitation of prostitution of children or minors or whatever, I don't know what exact charges, but yet none of her clients are being investigated. We can't know the names of her clients, and yet you got. And then you have, I read in a newspaper, it was 1,200 people, in the union, whatever, that 1,200 people are accusing basically of being abused in the YDC. And then you have this committee to investigate DCYF started by Leah Cushman. And Leah Cushman's like, okay, we see where the committees went wrong before. When it came to investigate this stuff, we had no testimony under oath. We need testimony under oath or it's useless. So she allows for there to be oaths. In fact, one of the other board members brought it up at the first hearing. You can watch it on YouTube there. And one of the other committee members said, I'd like to I motion the committee to put everyone under oath. And then one of the Democrats is like, oh, no, that's not necessary, blah, 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 because, you know, the Democrats are playing cover up. A bunch of Republicans, anybody who's, you know, addicted to this federal money is wanting to cover this up. Actually, anyone who has a pension that is a government pension in the state of New Hampshire wants this covered up, because the amount of money that the pensions get, the judicial pension fund and other executive pension funds get, from what I understand, I'm not an accountant, but I put a guy to work on this and he's still working on it. But basically he said if that Title IV money or Title 42 money or Title 20 money, there's all, and now I'm finding out there's like so much money coming in from the feds. It's unbelievable. And it's coming in from all different directions, all different titles, all different programs. If that money gets cut off, these pension funds are insolvent. They're basically all the government pension funds, according to Robert Kiyosaki, who's the rich dad, poor dad guy. They're all insolvent, and basically they would just collapse if they don't get the federal money. And all this money comes out of the Social Security Administration, so they're saying, oh, Social Security is running out. One report I had read said in 2021 that the Social Security Administration forked out $492 million for Title IV-D, which is the judicial pension fund, is 66% of that money, I guess. But $492 million is what the Social Security Administration dispersed to the 50 states through just Part E of the Title IV or Part D of the Title IV program. Never mind A, B, C, E, F, G, H, all these others. But anyways, and then so they kick Leah off this committee because the Sherman Packard, the Speaker of the House, kicks Leah off this committee because of the oaths. And now they're not asking to do oaths because these guys do not want a real investigation to happen. Sherman Packard is part of this conspiracy to cover up the crimes of DCYF. I am sure if you start looking at the dollars somewhere, somehow, I don't know if either, you know, it's his donors or his friends or him personally or family members or, you know, the guy's just a statist cult member parasite, you know, and, you know, whatever. And he wants to see the state thrive and all these pension funds, you know, be nice and propped up. So all the people on a judicial pension fund and the executive pension fund, you know, have these fat, happy golden parachute pensions that are, you know, essentially, you know, being propped up by the, you know, guns being directly pointed at taxpayers to support these. And also now we know that the direct torture of children, the stealing of children, the violation of due process laws, the violation of you know, constitutional rights, the violation of a right to a jury trial. I mean, all of these elements that is being talked about with all this stuff with DCYF, we can find them all in the grievances of the founding fathers and why they had to have a Revolutionary War with, you know, a tyrannical government, you know, 200 some odd years ago. And so this union is almost 250 years old, and it's ready to collapse because governments don't really last that long throughout history. And I'm hopeful for a collapse because these parasites, they have just so much power, frankly, because they can just keep on printing money out of thin air. But yeah, they are hell-bent on making sure that there is no testimony under oath. It is so important that people, when people utter these words about what happened to them, they say, you know, I do solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me, Great Spirit or God or universe or whatever you want to say. And because that is sworn testimony that can actually be used to do something. And so it's continuing right now. There is a cover up happening, you know, soft cover up happening right now with a current. And they're supposed to have a meeting, I believe, on the 1st. And I don't know the exact schedule for this committee to investigate DCYF. And since they got Erica Layton is her name, and since she got in there, was appointed chair. And I don't know if she's just, you know, there to romance the stone and make everything look good, or if she actually really cares. But I don't know what the deal is with her. I just don't really have an opinion. But there's still, as of, I haven't gotten an email. I'm looking through my email right now, and they're like, you know, they're supposed to email me. I gave her my email. When are you going to have the next hearing? Because at these hearings, I only want to hear 10 minutes. Well, I got a lot of bad actors to tell this committee about. You know, 5 social workers, 2 lawyers, for example, and you know, I need, you know, at least 7 or 8 more hearings to get through all the stuff I just got to tell them at 10 minutes at a whack, you know, under oath. And they haven't had another hearing, and I think they're trying to push it so there's no more hearings, and you know, and then the session's done and it's all over.
Weird.
Who knows? That's, so that's there needs to be a hearing date. In fact, I'm going to text Erica, the committee chair, about that again.
Well, I've never heard of that. It is an election year, so maybe they're trying to push things off to make it seem like they're pushing under the rug to hide things so that they don't have to deal with it until the next administration comes in, and they're like, oh, we
that
don't.
That sounds like that could be the case, but that's, I'm surprised that that's even a tactic they can do. But so I just think let's put this in perspective of, you know, this is happening all over the country. People are getting their kids taken away for maybe they are bad parents. But they're taken and given to the state, which is almost never a better situation for children than being with their own parents. And even if it's better than being with their own parents, the government is then abusing them and getting paid to do it. The government of each state gets paid from the feds to literally traffic children. That's exactly what this is taking kids from their parents and giving them to other people at a profit. That's trafficking. And at the age that Charles was in this detention center, I feel like he should have been able at some point to just emancipate himself and go, you know, live, you know, doing small jobs or something, like live on a farm and work for his living or something. And like anyone would be better off doing that. It's just crazy to act like people who are 15 years old don't have the same rights that an 18-year-old does. It's so silly. I just think that if you're not able to live with your parents are truly unable to take care of you, and you don't have any family you can go to, and you're old enough to choose to make other decisions, you should be allowed to do that. But the government keeps people from doing that, has people in these detention centers all over the country, these juvenile detention centers, usually what I hear them called, and who is stopping them from being abused? It's obviously not the people who work there, because nobody there is their parents who care about them and love them, or their families. A lot of people, there's so many people I meet, like every year I meet tons more of people that had their kids taken away from them when they really loved their kids and they were trying to get them back. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
So I just wanted to point out to you a couple of these conflicts. Like as of right now, if anyone tunes in and watches the Dave Meehan trial, or the Sununu sex torture trial that's on TV, their prosecutor right now, his name is Chase. I want to see Brandon Chase. Brandon Chase he's the assistant attorney general. It is the attorney general's office that has taken Dave Meehan's statements and actually indicted people.
So that's the bumper music. Do you have time to stay on the line with us?
Yes, I'll stay on.
Okay. It's Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. Right now we're talking about the Sununu Youth Detention Center and the trial with over 1,000 kids claiming they were tortured and raped there. 603-283-6160. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
And 603-283-6160 is the number you can call. That's 603-283-6160. And we're going to get back on the line with Charles in a second, who's holding. But Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. With fees of less than a penny per transaction, Dash is made for spending. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org. freetalklive.org. And with you in the studio tonight on Free Talk Live, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay Noon.
And Riley.
And Charles is online with us. He said that he had more that he wanted to say about this whole... If you haven't heard, if you're in New Hampshire, then you're probably living under a rock. There is this huge story about this thing called the Sununu Detention Center, where they hold Sununu Youth Detention Center, where it's basically a juvenile detention center, and it's been around for decades, but it's actually named after the dad of the current governor, whose last name is also Sununu. So it's been around for a really long time, and there's currently a trial going on because 1,400 kids, or people who I guess used to be kids at least, are suing different officers. Or Charles, are you guys suing the officers themselves, or who's actually the defendant?
We're suing the officers. Some of the officers. I'm suing Jeff Buskey, Tommy Searles, Richard Brown. There's a slew of other guys, Stephen Murphy, Lamont Hicks. There's about over 1,400 ex-residents of the Sununu Youth Detention Center that are suing DHHS, DCYF, the state of New Hampshire for systemic abuse. Now, the state is attempting to cover this up, and we know that because New Hampshire is a mandatory reporting state. And if anyone watched Dave's trial, the ex-attorney affairs officer and another officer just testified that they referred complaints to the state police. Well, they won't release any of the state police reports. Where are all these reports from the 90s? Who didn't do their job in the attorney general's office? But even bigger than that, we attempted to get my records from a doctor, William Windler. He was one of two doctors that worked at YDC from like 1990 to the 2000s. And they've destroyed all of the medical records. You know, broken bones, girls pregnant, kids that got STDs while they were there. Destroyed all of the records. There is no medical records. There's still nurse reports, and this is where they've messed up, because some of the nurse reports explain broken bones. There's also log reports where they log out vehicles to transport kids to the hospital and the medical facilities, and on some of those reports, they've actually placed what the injury is. So they've destroyed the medical records. They either won't give, they're suppressing, or they've destroyed the state police reports from back then. And even right now, during trial, Brandon Chase is the assistant attorney general. And here he is trying to gaslight my good friend, David Meehan. And he's trying to say, you had mental illness. You were a wild kid. Well, he's on the stand. Wow. But yet, the other half of the attorney general's office has used what Dave has told them to indict. That's why not once during this trial have they said, Dave, you're lying. Dave, we're impeaching you. Instead, they're trying to gaslight him and make him look like he's vicious. This same guy, Brandon Chase, okay, he's actually right now representing, he's representing the ex-top child sex crimes detective, James McLaughlin, and trying to hide the misconduct in that case called John Doe versus the city of Keene. So this is our attorney generals. They're fighting not to open up the Lori list, not to expose, you know, malfeasance and corruption. You know, it's obvious now, not just through that, but Chuck Douglas, who was the head of the judiciary, was the chief justice at one point, was the first one that really let New Hampshire know. I think it's in Jane Doe versus New Hampshire, State versus Jane Doe, where he actually allows for delinquent kids and foster kids, at-risk kids, to all be mixed together. And New Hampshire does this because the towns, the cities, and the school departments, we're all pointing the finger at who's going to pay for these delinquent children, who's going to pay for these special needs children, these at-risk children. And that's the first showing in 1981 where he groups them all together because he knows he can tap into the Social Security Act. Fast forward four decades. He's now representing kids in the YDC Sununu Youth Center lawsuit saying, hey, come over here. I'll represent you. We'll go get you part of that settlement fund. We'll tap into the settlement fund. We'll get you paid. They don't really, the same people that were in charge of hiding this, suppressing this misconduct, are the same people now that are tapping into trying to hide it now. And it's sad. It's sad because they're out there, you know, they're wolves in sheep clothing trying to act as if they're there to help us. You know, if it wasn't for, you know, our grassroots people that are out there that are raising the stink, they're out there, you know, trying to push petitions. Obviously, Leah, we need to get her back in her position. I don't know if you guys know Therese Bastarash, Therese the nurse. I know she's running for executive council next year. She would be great just because she loves children. This is a nonpartisan thing. If you're against pedophilia, if you're against child sex trafficking, then we need to link arms, you know, in solidarity to overthrow this establishment. This establishment that's been in power in New Hampshire for decades and decades that, you know, that have been hiding corruption and child abuse and framing people. And
it's just so obvious to me that the government, the cops don't work for us, and neither do the attorney generals and those people that are more higher up. They work for each other, and they're in their own class, and they want to keep the benefits that they have coming and not let the people that they believe are underneath them that actually work and, you know, not just work, but are, you know, produce things in life for other people and are productive. Well, I don't believe that the government does any of that stuff, and it's really them against us in their minds. That's why they have their little blue line, because they believe that they're gang signs. It's really a gang sign.
Of course. And it also sounds to me like the Sununu family is a really corrupt family.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. I watched Frank Staples' trial for getting arrested in front of Chris Sununu's house, and he had his... I was there when he got arrested, the day he got arrested, and he had his neighbor come and say that we, the protesters, were blocking her driveway and screaming so loud that it was like, you know, nobody could sleep and stuff in the neighborhood. Like, none of that was true. she said she was feared for her life that day when there were just people in the... There's like a field in the middle of a cul-de-sac. That's the only place that the protesters went, including Frank, and he got arrested that day. And I just think that he like paid his neighbor to say that. She just looked like she was lying too. Those people are also corrupt.
Yeah.
And he also lied. Oh, go ahead.
That's all they do is lie. And and unfortunately, a lot of them are attorneys, or they have, you know, the most. You know, you'll notice one thing. You can't find an attorney in this state that, you know, is going to challenge the attorney general's office.
You're so right.
No matter what it is.
They don't want to challenge the court in them itself, because then they would be disbarred or just like in trouble with the judge. Because really, attorneys literally work for the court. They swear an oath, and they're, what is the word? They're officers
of the court.
Right, right. So they don't work for you, even though you're the one paying them. And it's going to be, you're going to be hard pressed to find ones that'll actually stand up for what's right if it's against the government as like the system that it is. Instead of just, you know, making arguments against, you know, this person did this to me, like private people, they'll do that all day. But you're going to be hard to find it's going to be hard for you to find a lawyer that will actually challenge something the government's doing, because really they all work together. It's the cops, the attorneys, the judges, the attorney generals, and then the feds come in here too, and they give the state people money to do certain things. And like you're saying, the feds are saying, oh, we require an audit of these facilities, but clearly they don't require a very good audit, because everybody knew what was going on at the Sununu Youth Detention Center. Lots and lots of people did, apparently. And somehow it just all slipped past an audit, or several audits. So, did you have anything else you wanted to share with us, Charles?
Just that, you know, I hope that we can link arms and unite, you know, nonpartisan. I know that you guys have your mission, but as far as this child abuse and sex trafficking, this is going to take a movement. And if we don't stick together to replace these people, we're not going to get the job done. The only thing we can do is replace them. We need to replace them.
Well, not only replace, we got to eliminate these positions of power, because these positions of power attract psychopaths. So the kind of people that are attracted to a job at a youth detention center are quite literally psychopaths. I mean, they are people who lust for power. They are people who want to do bad things, who want to abuse. And even like with the DCYF social workers, I mean, they're a bunch of woke, mentally ill libtards that, you know, don't have children that want to control my children and want to control everyone else's children. And they want access to them, and they want to teach them their, you know, they want to give them their mental, you know, their woke virus. They want to transfer it to these children. They're doing it through the schools, doing it with all these things. But yeah, we need massive, you know, cutting of government, and they're not even government. You know, the DCYF, it's a municipal corporation. That's all it is. It's not even a government. They don't even call themselves a government or anything. They call themselves a division of the state of New Hampshire, and the state of New Hampshire is just a municipal corporation. There is a state of New Hampshire Republic, but, you know, that's not really doing anything. Nobody's really occupying it. Nobody's, you know, claiming. You even ask judges in any of these courts, circuit court, superior court, family court, are they working for the state of New Hampshire Republic or the state of New Hampshire Corporation? And they get very upset when you ask them those questions. A friend of mine just had a judge tell him that the jurisdiction of the court is statutory. So that's another thing. If the people are guaranteed a right of due process, then the presumption must be that the people have waived due process when dealing with these courts and DCYF, because when they're using statutory law, that is anti-due process. Charging anyone with a statute, any of the people with a statute, violates due process, because due process is exclusively without the statutes. Because the statutes are only for government entities and government contractors. So unless all these people they're charging are government entities, government contractors, or have willingly and knowingly waived their rights to due process, but nobody's smart enough to ask these questions, because nobody's smart enough to even defend themselves. Everybody just gets lawyers. And like you said, the lawyers are... they're your enemy spies. The judge is your enemy. The prosecutor is your enemy. And the lawyer is an enemy spy.
They'll go into the chambers and have a conversation without you.
With yeah, much.
And that's a quote from Erwin Rommel. When I was a teenager, my dad was doing this Erwin Rommel law study thing. And he had a briefcase full of cassette tapes. And we'd be driving to a horse auction, and we'd listen to hours of the Erwin Rommel School of Law. And anyways, but yeah, these guys are—they're all part of a cabal. And it's a whole bunch of Republicans in this too. And Therese Grinnell—not Therese Grinnell. There's a whistleblower named Ashley Rosato or Rosati. If you look up New Hampshire DCYF whistleblower Ashley Rosati or Martin and Hipple, they were the lawyers that represented her in a civil suit against the state of New Hampshire because she was terminated for being a whistleblower. And you read her articles, and she talks about how it's a play to get along, so you can work up the corporate ladder, work up the state ladder, get higher ranks. So you look at this federal attorney, U.S. district attorney. What's her name? You guys have mentioned her before.
Jane Young.
So Jane Young was before she was a district attorney. She was involved somehow else, right? You were talking about.
She was. Yep. Are you saying with the Inns case?
No, with what Charlie was talking about with the youth detention center.
Oh, he said that she was one of the people that said that she was investigating it, right?
Yeah, she was a county attorney, and then she went over to the attorney general's office, and then she became like assistant attorney general, and now she's at the U.S. attorney general's office. She's the top over there.
So it sounds like she got handsomely rewarded, and for just getting along and going along with the status quo, for not really investigating, you know, because this is how they find corrupt people to put in power. They say, oh, so a bunch of kids are getting raped and beaten and abused. Why don't you just let that go? And then we're going to work you up, you know, the you know, the parasite ladder, and you're going to be a top parasite, and you know, in this you know, parasitic cult that we call the United States government. And
she dresses like all extravagantly and has like the biggest hair you've ever seen. Like, her hair is like bigger than her head.
Wow, that's crazy.
Like one
all,
of the leads,
like, all fancy.
Like one of the lead psychopaths in the Hunger Games.
Yeah, seriously.
Stuff. Yep.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird when I saw her. I was like, that's her.
So when you ask the attorneys, how come it seems so non-adversarial, you know, you're not really challenging, you're not filing that these prosecutors that are violating the ethical obligation or the Supreme Court rules, and they'll tell you, we handle things on a collegiate level. We're not very adversarial because we handle things on a collegiate level. That's what they say. It's disgusting, you know?
Yeah, like they're like laughing with the prosecution right before the trial starts. They're like, hey, Georgie, oh, you look good today. How are you doing? How are the kids? And like, and you're like, what is going on? That's my lawyer laughing with the prosecution.
Yeah, your lawyer is an enemy spy. Just remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
So I'll, I run a little Facebook page. It's ran through Ashley George. It's at, Real Just Us. So R-E-A-L space J-U-S-T-U-S, like Just Us, Facebook.com. And we go out and we rally to let the public know that the government is complicit for decades of abuse of children, and to show them how, we'll be rallying again within the next month and a half. And, I know that some of the We the People will be out there, and, couple people from the ACLU, which they kind of, but as many people as possible.
Thing.
We need as many, we need as many people as possible. It's nonpartisan. It's just the page is comprised of almost all YDC victims or victims that were in state care, and we know what's going on. We know exactly what's going on, but a lot of times the public don't, and until the public does and people are willing to maybe go out there and do some voter engagement, we're not going to win this battle. So we'll be out there within the next month or so. That's pretty much all I got. I want to thank you guys for letting me come on your show.
Thank you so much for your call. Hopefully people will go check out Real Just Us at Facebook.com. And thank you for everything that you're doing out there. I think it's always good when people are pointing out what happened to, you know, personally happened to them, like Charles, and also just what's going on, what the state is doing, because a lot of people just, since it's behind, out of sight, out of mind, they just don't know about it. And they, the more people talking about this kind of stuff, I do think it's important. I don't know all these details, or I'm not like very familiar with the case. A lot of times it's just like, I know so much bad stuff about that the government's doing that it just feels like just filling my brain with junk to like go learn about every single like cop abuse and every single, you know, dirty detail with this youth detention center. But I still really appreciate people calling in and telling their stories, because
it's
like,
definitely depressing that we live in a world where government corruption is the norm and people aren't surprised by it. But we should be living in a world where people are extremely surprised and extremely shocked by government corruption, shocked enough that they're going to remove these punks from office.
Yeah, I wish people, were a bit more shocked about it. Well, one case about like rape that was very interesting to people was Harvey Weinstein's case, Weinstein's case. And I find it kind of interesting that people care more about, you know, Hollywood celebrities getting raped.
Well, the Hollywood celebrities are more noticeable. They're more up front. They're I don't know how to put it, but they're the people that are going to get the most views or the most likes, the most clout on the internet or the world in general, because they're in the movies, they're doing all these things, and people want to be like them for whatever reason. I don't understand it. Maybe that's just me. But it's just strange that Hollywood sets the tone for society.
Hmm. It kind of does. A lot of people say that life imitates art, and yeah. I see it all the time. Like when I was a third grader, that was the first year I was in public school, which I was 9 and like everybody else was 8 because my mom had me redo third grade. She was like, oh, I'm afraid I didn't do well, but then I did very well. Like it was easy to me. But what I was trying to actually say was it was my first year in programming, aka public school.
Government school.
I could just see all of, yes, government school. I could see all of these little weird behaviors from the other kids that I never had seen before. Like, I just knew when they were copying, like, a cartoon character that I knew about, I'd be like, whoa, she's literally saying, like, the stuff that Raven from Teen Titans says. She is literally, like, she has adopted that personality. Why won't she just be herself? And I was only 9 years old. But people do that all the time, even now, with, like, movies that they've seen, their favorite shows. They kind of integrate their their favorite characters' personalities. It's literally programming. Like, it's how they program you to live and behave. It's weird.
And with Hollyweird shaping society, I mean, that's only for, you know, like, the parents that are, you know, putting their kids in front of the TV. Like, when I was a little kid, when I was in, you know, grade school, you know, I had a farm to go to every day after school, which was, you know, pretty awesome, you know, growing up the way I grew up. But I had a lot of buddies, you know, they went to daycare after school, or they went home and, you know, and they just sat in front of the TV and played video games, or sat in front of the TV and just watched TV until their parents came home, or their parents were, you know, their parents either worked or were on welfare, but they were just usually watching TV. Except for the kids that were raised by the entrepreneurs. All my peers that their parents had businesses, they usually went after school on a weekend. They were working with their parents at the business, which, you know, one of my buddies, his father had an oil company, Noonan Oil. They're actually a pretty huge company, Teddy Noonan. And he was one of these kids that went to work every day after school.
I always thought that sounded so fun as a kid. I always was like, I wish that my dad, like, owned a restaurant and I could work there with him as a kid, because kids actually want to do that kind of stuff, but my dad didn't work for the private sector.
I had another buddy that his parents owned a restaurant, and every day, and he rode the school bus, you know, every day. He got dropped off at the restaurant after school, and his house was at a different spot in town, and he got picked up. And I do remember that there was, like, the school or whatever was like, well, we can't be doing that, you know, just dropping them off. I mean, it's not like it was any extra cost. But and then I have another friend. He grew up paving, and now he owns a big paving company. His father had a paving company, and, you know, these kids of entrepreneurs worked really hard. But they didn't get manipulated so much by Hollywood like the kids who were just stuck home. And the thing is now what's worse in Hollywood is the algorithm. The internet, you know.
It's like written by AI now, and the people who are supposed to write are going on strike because of AI. All you're doing is giving your jobs directly to the AI, but...
Yeah.
603-283-6160 is Free Talk Live. You can call in with whatever's on your mind. There's news in the Harvey Weinstein rape conviction. It was overturned in New York, and we're going to talk about that when in the next segment. 603-283-6160. Don't go anywhere. It's Free Talk Live.
Hi, I'm Derek J. To me, an activist's calling is to actively work to advance a cause. The cause for which I work is personal freedom. I believe my life is best when I engage in voluntary interactions and self-government. I reject the idea that anyone else has a higher claim to my life or my body than I do. I see people who call themselves the government as a threat to my personal freedom. I realize you may feel differently, but my relationship with the people who call themselves the government is completely involuntary. If Starbucks used some of its money to drop bombs, I wouldn't shop there. So why would I support the American Empire? The Empire does not require my consent.
Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. You can order your copy of the Director's Cut DVD now at victimlesscrimespree.com.
Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. That means you can call 603-283-6160 and get in on the conversation with us. You can bring up whatever's on your mind that you want people listening to about 150 radio stations across the states to hear. You can change the subject. You can just give us your opinion on what we're talking about. It doesn't matter because it's Free Talk Live. That number is 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay Noon.
And Riley.
And I would like to thank Colby Keddington, who's a silver level amplifier with us. We really appreciate everybody who's an amplifier. That means that Colby went to amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. And decided to give us a donation every month for running the show and keeping things on the air, keeping lights on. And also, if you go to amps.freetalklive.com, you can learn about the perks and benefits you get. So thank you so much to Colby for being an amplifier with us. We really appreciate everyone who does. And on the phones, we have Rob from Vermont. Rob, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I want to commend that last caller that called in and the work that they're doing. This is fantastic. And you know, I was out myself last night over at the Claremont City Hall, where the council over there removed Representative John Stone from the panel. And it was a 5-3 decision vote. And there must have been, 50, 60 people in there that couldn't get everybody all in the room. It was packed. And the people are upset about all of this. And now that he's out of that role, the next role is to get him out of his seat up in Concord, New Hampshire.
So you said they removed him from the panel. What panel did they remove him from?
He was, the vote was a 5-3 for removing Stone from the Claremont Development Authority and the Policy Committee.
Okay.
And it was effective immediately.
Wow.
And I've just put together a letter that I'm sending off, or that I sent off to the Speaker of the House about this individual. Not sure if I'll get a response back or anything, but this is what we need to do. We need to keep on the pressure with this. Some of the other things that could be done is, you know, people start bringing flyers. And when you go to the city halls or when you go out there to protest, bring flyers with you and share this with the public. And then encourage the public to share this with their friends and family. Because it doesn't seem that we're getting enough press on this. You know, the press has kind of been silent about a lot of things. Like, for instance, Detective James F. McGoffin, who now works at the county attorney's office in Keene, New Hampshire, part-time as an investigator. That's so wrong. Look this gentleman up on Google in New Hampshire, and you'll see exactly what I'm referring to.
What's his name?
James F. McLaughlin.
Yeah, like I said, people fail up in the government, so if you're a terrible creep harming people and you're a cop, you're probably going to just like get moved on and up the rest of your career until you're, you know, in charge of things that a creepy, terrible abuser shouldn't be in charge of.
Exactly, and my feeling is that all those individuals, those John Does and Jane Does that are trying to get away from all of this, that are collecting pensions that the hardworking people of the state of New Hampshire are paying, take and put a stop on those pensions until their issues are resolved. They should not be being paid.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I don't think there should be pensions for any of these government employees whatsoever. I mean, it's all a scam anyways, the whole pension system. It's all, you know, getting ready to collapse, best I can tell. And, you know, the people today aren't going to see, You know, the people working, you know, right now in their 20s or 30s and their 40s aren't going to see no, and you know, any pension money like what people are getting for pensions right now. Like, for example, I know of someone who worked for the education system in the state, and their salary, because they have a doctorate and they didn't teach, they weren't a teacher, they were an administrator. Their salary was like $120,000 a year. And now they collect like $84,000 a year in pension. And they weren't a school teacher. They were an administrator. And this is what your school taxes go to pay. And for I think for like every one teacher that's being paid right now, there's like four or five that you're paying a pension for. And they say that 80% of your property tax goes towards basically the school budget. And 80% of that school budget goes to service to pensions. And the other thing is the pensions are all serviced first. And I like the idea that in Florida, like, for example, there is no pension for teachers. So that's good, because if you don't have a guaranteed golden parachute retirement program, that means that you're actually going to have to work hard and you're going to have to save some money and not, you know, be spending your money on all kinds of stupid stuff because you don't have to pay for you know, a pension. Like I seen a kid, he's like
a retirement.
I see a kid, he's like 24 years old, it's like 10 years ago, and he's got a brand new F-350 pickup truck, he's got a brand new quad in the back, and he had a brand new bass boat hooked to it, and he was telling me he's going to get it but something about his camper, and he's telling about all this stuff he got, and I'm like, man, you're living like you're a government employee. And he goes, "How'd you know I was a government employee?"
Wow.
He goes, "I'm a janitor at the Veterans Hospital."
And I just don't really get it. Like, why they have to have these crazy, really good retirement programs for every single government employee, whether they're the janitor or, you know, a cop or whatever.
I imagine this is to attract people to the job, because otherwise they wouldn't work with the institution calling itself government.
That's a good point. So it's like, and also like to gain loyalty, like you're not going to want to like disobey. And thank you for the call, Rob. We do have another caller on the line, so I'm going to go to an unscreened caller. You're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Well, I called under another question, but listening to the last caller, I believe I can answer some of those questions. The question came up about why these public employees, specifically teachers and education administrators, command these retirement programs, and they are rather generous, I have to admit. Now, specifically in California, they have what's known as a defined benefit rather than a defined contribution. Now, the difference between the two is that the employee is guaranteed a certain amount of money upon retirement. Defined contribution is that the employee gets whatever has been accumulated, and that number will not be determined until he's at retirement age. So that's the difference in those two programs. Now, what happens is that you've got notoriously low wages being paid to these education employees, and to compensate, it's much easier for the school district to administer a retirement plan when you have 50% contribution into it than it is to pay a salary with, you know, medical and so on and so on. So that's why we are...
Teachers are the only ones that anyone brings up when I point out that no government employee is underpaid. Honestly, I still don't think that teachers are underpaid, but everyone will claim that. But it doesn't matter. The point is that those are the only ones anybody can bring up. No other government employee is underpaid.
Well, that's a matter of opinion, with all due respect. And apparently in the job market, in order to retain quality teachers and have the consistency in instruction within the school district, they have to do something.
Okay, but what I'm saying is it doesn't explain why every other government employee has pension funds that are so generous. That's what I'm saying. It's like,
not only do teachers have this generous pension fund, but the teachers' pension fund is the most expensive for the taxpayers.
And it's just a known fact that people, when they're applying for a government job, they're like, get you a government job. They pay well. It's not like I'm just saying like that out of nowhere. I used to live on Dugway Proving Ground, mostly civilian government jobs, government workers. Everybody talks about this, like, oh, you could do that in the public sector, but you'll make way more money if you do the same thing as a government employee.
That's true. I can't argue that point. My only perspective is, you know, from direct knowledge, is with the Teachers Retirement Association in California. So I just put that forward for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I called in was about the governor of Arizona, Katie Hobbs, who recently made news by vetoing the legislation that was going to ban squatters in homes, basically. And she now is on record as having the greatest number of vetoes of legislation within any state, certainly within Arizona, in all time. And the question that's never answered and also is never asked is, well, how many of those vetoes have been overridden by the Arizona legislature? Hmm. And I cannot find the answer to that question anywhere. I just wanted to, you know, see if you guys knew where some of that information can be obtained.
Unfortunately, no. I don't.
Were you for or against this bill that she vetoed?
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just asking, were you for or against this new bill that she vetoed about the squatters?
She's against it. The legislature had put forward legislation that outlawed squatting in single-family homes.
Right.
It basically gave the homeowner permission to call the sheriff and summarily evict those people. I mean, at the moment, there's no waiting. There's no legal paperwork. The sheriff comes and evicts them. She vetoed that legislation.
Yeah, and the question Bonnie had for you was if you were for or against that particular legislation.
Oh, I'm for that legislation.
Right, that sounds like good legislation.
I would agree.
Are you?
I don't think anybody's against it, but Katie Hobbs.
Well, Katie Hobbs is, you know, she's very much affiliated with the Mexican drug cartels. There's a big deal. And are you in Arizona?
I live in Texas, actually.
Okay. Well, there's a guy, his show is on the LRN.FM network a few days a week. His name's Ernest Hancock. Have you heard of his show, Declare Your Independence?
Don't think I have.
Okay.
But I can definitely look it up.
So go to his website, Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, and top right, click on Archives. And there, or you can even search his website for Arizona Secretary of State's office, cartel land, something or another. But anyways, so Katie Hobbs was the Secretary of State, I believe, before she was governor, if I got that correct.
Correct.
And was,
yes.
So some woman who's like an insurance actuary came into the Arizona legislature to testify. And basically provided these guys with like a 300-something page brief. Every legislator, you know, every whatever representative got one. And she starts going through her thing about how the drug cartels are basically laundering their money through the Secretary of State's office of New Hampshire via buying a whole bunch of single-family homes, because all through Arizona, you got these developments, and tons of finished single-family homes, and nobody's living in them, because they're mostly owned, from what this report had to say, mostly owned by the drug cartels, because the drug cartels are parking their dollars in these houses, and they're doing it through these, like, they have the thing called the New Hampshire Trust, which is, you know, being used by like the Sununu and Sheenahan crime families here in New Hampshire to like launder drug money, fentanyl money and stuff. They call it the New Hampshire Drug Cartel. These guys doing it. But so they're setting up these trusts. The Secretary of State's office authorized these trusts, and then these trusts are buying, you know, thousands of single family homes with cartel drug money, because the cartels got so much money, so much USD, that they need to do something with it. They can't bring it all back to Mexico, because, you know, a lot of Mexico doesn't really want USD. When I was down there, it was hard. Nobody wanted to accept US dollars. They all wanted pesos.
Wow.
Pesos are cryptocurrency. Anyways, keep that in mind with Katie Hobbs. So, you know, she's been working for the cartel for a very long time, according to this report. And there was a whole Bob Anderson and Ernie Hancock did like a whole 2.5-hour show all about this report. And if you check out freedomsphoenix.com and start searching their website about Katie Hobbs, Mexican cartels and single family homes, you'll find some stuff that would tell you just why Katie Hobbs would want to keep on allowing, squatters to do the thing.
And unfortunately, I do think that tons of people agree with squatting. I think it's so absolutely mind-blowing that there are people who really believe that they have a right to use someone else's property against their will. It's just like, as soon as somebody wants you out of their house, as long as it isn't breaking any contracts, you should get out and find a new place to live. It's I just can't wrap my mind around those types of people. Like, there's a person here in New Hampshire.
I don't think most people can, and all the more reason to move to Florida.
I don't know if Florida's the best answer for that, but okay.
Maybe they have better squatter rights. I don't know.
In Florida, they remove the squatters. In fact, there's this guy, Sheriff Judd Grady, I think is his name. He's got a YouTube. He's pretty funny to listen to, but he's always doing these press conferences. And one of them, he was like, well, here in whatever county, you want to make the paperwork easy for us. We encourage you to shoot the guy that walks into your house uninvited. Just kill him dead. And it makes the paperwork a lot easier. You got a right to do that here in Florida. And the taxpayer, and you're going to save the taxpayers a lot of money. And which he's right. Florida's a stand your ground state. They're not putting up with the with any of the squatter nonsense. And property values in Florida are going to go up. And, this kind of thing here where if squatters can just stay in your house, that's really going to drive property values down a lot. And the other problem with Arizona, see, the squatter thing would be a real big issue in Florida because there's so many houses that are basically empty for, 4 to 7 months of the year in Florida. And same thing with Arizona. You got a lot of people from Colorado, Montana, Western Canada.
The snowbirds.
That are Arizona snowboard birds. So they're only in their houses, half the year. Arizona's going to be a real issue. And then you're going to have a bunch of the, mentally ill, woke libtards, coming out of California into, Arizona to take advantage of this. Squatting, and then you got...
Just going to vote and cry about some absolutely terrible person who's not working, squatting in someone's house, getting kicked out. I don't understand feeling bad for those types of people. Like, there's a person that us three in the studio may actually know that is squatting at someone's house right now in New Hampshire just because she received one piece of mail to the house, and apparently that's all it takes in New Hampshire. That really should be...
That should
overturned.
Be definitely changed because that's definitely a violation of property rights.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to the caller's question. And thank you for the call, sir. I don't know the answer to his question about how many times the vetoes that this Arizona governor has made, how many times they've been overturned. I don't even know how to look it up or anything. And also, I'm pretty New Hampshire centric. It's like I care more about what's going on here than the other states, to be honest. So
it's easier to care about your own neighborhood than to focus on Israel or Arizona while you're in New Hampshire. It's just easier to do it that way.
I think it's just morally usually works out better because it's like if you're really worried about what's going on in other people's lives and property, you're probably neglecting something in your own. Things just seem to work that way. Like if you're really worried about someone else's life, even you're probably neglecting to see the errors in your own. So we had brought up this news at the beginning of the segment. This is from ABC News. Harvey Weinstein's rape conviction overturned in New York. The DA will attempt to retry. So it says the rape conviction of movie producer Harvey Weinstein has been overturned by New York's highest court. And you brought this story in, Riley. Do you have any opinions on that?
I just find it interesting. So Harvey Weinstein was the guy that kicked off the Me Too movement. And it's just interesting that his rape conviction was overturned because, he's probably one of these corrupt dudes. But I'm wondering why. Was there not enough evidence to convict him? I don't remember what the article said. I just know they talked about his conviction being overturned.
Right. I do want to know why it was overturned as well. It's always just kind of interesting why the courts do these oddball things that they do sometimes. It says the New York Court of Appeals, in a scathing 3-4 opinion, overturned Weinstein's conviction on sex crimes against three women, finding the trial judge erroneously admitted testimony of uncharged, alleged prior sexual acts against persons other than the complainants of the underlying crime. So what he's saying is the judge brought in testimony about other acts other than the thing that he was there on trial for. So that kind of makes sense. Like, that would definitely poison the jury. It's like in Ross Ulbricht's trial, they were talking about things that he wasn't charged for. They were talking, like, the prosecution was allowed to talk about, there was this alleged behavior where it was claimed before that he ordered a hit against somebody, but that was never proven. There was no actual evidence of it or anything, but yeah. The prosecution was allowed to talk about it, and to me that seems to definitely have, like, that would be something that would poison the jury, and he should have his thing overturned just for that. But it's too late now. For Ross, his only chance of getting out of prison now is a presidential pardon,
which may not happen because, you know, these presidents are all bought and sold by the global elites, or whatever you want to call them, or some cabal somewhere. So I don't think Ross is going to be pardoned at all. It's just, so when Harvey Weinstein gets his rape conviction overturned, he gets a new trial, which is good, because then he can have his rights restored or whatever. But at the same time, this gives an opportunity for the people accusing him of rape to actually re-defend themselves. But unfortunately, they may be re-traumatized by this whole experience too. So I guess the therapists are going to be making some money.
And Harvey Weinstein is very, very connected. He's got a little dirt on a lot of people. And in order to be an appeals judge in New York, you have to be corrupt.
I'm sure
in all states, all the judges are corrupt.
They're all just corrupt. And yep. We've talked about it all the time here on Free Talk Live. And 603-283-6160 is the number that you can call to get in on Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere.
The Shire Free Church offers a sanctuary to those seeking an escape from state churches.
The Shire Free Church is an interfaith, diverse group of people that may not share identical theological beliefs.
As a member in or minister of the Shire Free Church, you are a sovereign individual and may be the faith of your choice.
We don't claim to have all of the answers.
We are open to all peaceful people.
We want to learn from each other.
What unifies the Shire Free Church and its diverse members is peace,
love,
and liberty. There are many paths to God, one for every individual.
The Shire Free Church does not define a specific path beyond these parameters that must be your foundation.
Peace as your way.
Love as your guide.
And liberty as your light.
Learn more at church.shiresociety.com.
That's church. ShireSociety.com. It's Free Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number. That's 603-283-6160, and Free Talk Live is brought to you by LibertyMinded.com. Official Free Talk Live gear like t-shirts and hoodies are available at LibertyMinded.com. Plus, you'll find a unique collection of cool and funny Liberty-oriented clothing at LibertyMinded.com. That's LibertyMinded.com. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Jay,
and Riley.
And I'm just going to go right into you guys' phone calls and thoughts. Peter, where are you calling us from, Peter? I forgot to ask.
Yes, I'm calling in from Virginia, and I'm actually driving back home, so sorry if you guys hear a car. But the topic I wanted to talk about... The topic I wanted to talk about was stagflation, and, you know, I'm sure you all know, and your audience knows, we've been in some sort of stagflation, I would argue. Since.
So what does that exactly mean for the listeners who don't know? Stagflation, are you saying inflation? But what do you mean by what's the beginning part mean?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I should have elaborated. So stagflation basically is the phenomenon where we have low GDP, so low output, low economic output, low production, and we have high inflation, namely high consumer prices. And, you know, this is, I would argue, this has been here since, I would say, since COVID started, since the lockdowns and the whole PPP shenanigans and, you know, the COVID relief package that Trump signed off. And, you know, what this basically did was just bid up prices. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have a manufacturing base in this nation. And so, you know, when you give people free money and, you know, they love to buy things with that money, what happens is you have an increase in the trade deficit. But, you know, all this to say you had, right, at that time, more money chasing few goods. And so it just takes time for these things to show up in data. And, you know, government can try to, you know, release and publish the own metrics they use. And, you know, they try to underweigh the true rate of inflation. That's why they like to cite and they like to point to core inflation. Now, core inflation basically is convenient because it takes away two sectors that, you know, people like me and you spend most of our money on, and that's, you know, energy and I believe it's I'm blanking out. I think it's energy and is it food?
I think it's food.
We were talking about that yesterday. Yeah. It's food and energy, which is weird that they leave that out.
Exactly, and it's convenient because, you know, it's just gonna what it does is it understates the true rate of inflation for the given month, or it understates the change of inflation from month to month or year to year. And that's why they love to use it. But, you know, what happened today was the latest number came out and it was hotter than expected. And so, you know, inflation is starting to show up even in government's own, you know, predetermined metrics that it uses. And, you know, GDP, I would argue, is a complete fallacy the way it's calculated, because, you know, one parameter that's used to calculate GDP is government expenditures. And, you know, I believe we're spending every 3 months about $1.6 trillion. And so, well, you know, the latest figure that came out today, GDP was 1.6%. So you're telling me it takes $1.6 trillion of government expenditures, right, of spending on nonsense to come up with a GDP of 1.6%. You know, take that away, we're looking at, you know, possibly negative GDP. And so all this to say, we have low output, we have low production, and we have high prices. This is simply stagflation. And, you know, the last time this happened in this nation was throughout the 1970s. And how did we get out of this? Well, it took courage. It took someone called Paul Volcker to come into the Federal Reserve, and it took Reagan to appoint this guy back in the day. And it took Volcker courage to raise the Fed funds rate, you know, at that time, about 8%, 9%, which was really high. And you know, my parents used to tell me during that time, the mortgage they took out and the current home that they live in was at like 16% for a 30-year fixed mortgage. And so what's going to happen is, you know, the Feds right now, they were talking about cutting, you know, rates because they did it, right? Soft landing, Biden did it, Powell did it, we built back better, we got out of the mess that resulted because of COVID. Inflation wasn't because of government, right? It was because of a supply, you know, shock.
You're saying this is all what they want us to believe, all those things?
You know, well, that was the narrative they were portraying, right? It was COVID, it was supply shock, you know, it takes time, but at the end of the day, Biden did it, Powell did it. There's no need to worry, you know, don't vote for this Trump guy, you know, Biden did it. Unfortunately, you know, this has been in the making for numerous decades. And as you all know, you know, the heart of this issue lies in 2008. And unfortunately, they didn't allow for a correction. They decided to bail everyone out, and that resulted in massive money printing. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make is your viewers are, compared to, you know, day-to-day Americans, are a lot smarter, right? And my own opinion.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah, exactly. And my recommendation to your audience is to start looking after yourself and your families. You know, if you have any investments in U.S. denominated assets and long-term maturity bonds, for example, it's over. So what happened today was you had a rally in commodities, and namely in gold mining. And my recommendation to your audience is to educate yourselves in commodities and natural resources and in stuff like exploration and mining of not just gold, but metals in general, because believe me, the world will not stop because the U.S. is going through some sort of depression or stagflation. They will continue. Mm. Emerging markets will develop. And in order for a nation, right, to develop and keep up with production, namely nations outside the U.S., they need natural resources. In order to get resources, you have to explore and you have to, find them, mine them. And so take advantage of current cheap prices right now. I'm not saying I'm right, but that's my recommendation to do research on this. Look, I am a fan of Bitcoin, but unfortunately, Bitcoin, you can't compare it with natural resources during this time. And the reason why I say that is because natural resources, commodities, they proved to shine during the 1970s. Unfortunately, Bitcoin didn't exist, so we don't have some sort of benchmark, right, to say Bitcoin can do it, Bitcoin can get through this. If you all recall, Bitcoin was at $65,000 a couple weeks ago, and I believe it dipped. It's been dipping ever since. And
It's only like in the low 60,000s. It goes up and down.
Right, but exactly. But all this to say, right, is that prepare yourselves. It's here. It's been here. My recommendation is, don't vote at all for this new election. It doesn't matter who's in office. We saw what Trump did. He's basically a fellow Keynesian. I don't see any politician that has the courage to get us out of this mess. And therefore, please, prepare yourselves financially. Look after all we can do during this time, right, is look after ourselves and look after our families, and not just mental and physical health, right, but also financial health, and making sure that our kids and anyone close to us is well off and can be independent of any sort of assistance from state or the federal government. That's all I wanted to say.
I think that's really good advice. Thank you for the call, Peter. And I agree with him about basically everything that he said. I would say as far as Bitcoin versus gold, it's just they both have their use case.
They do. I mean, I'm a huge fan of both. I have gold. I have Bitcoin.
No reason not to diversify.
Yeah, there's no reason to not diversify. I just think it's important to make sure that, metals are definitely important. Don't get me wrong. I think it's important to have metals. I think it's important to have Bitcoin. But also, I think it's important to have a moral compass, because having a moral compass will help you get through tougher times than having assets. Because at least if you have a moral compass, you can have a moral compass guiding your life and making sure that you're not committing violent acts just to survive.
That's a good point.
And to add what that caller had to say, like, one of the things that, if people go to the grocery store, they can see that the price of food is just steadily climbing higher and higher. So you got a couple of things at work with that. So food, for example, like actual real nutritious healthy food that is like real whole food is basically very labor intensive, whether it's lettuce, produce, fruits, vegetables, and whatever kind of food that is whole food is very labor intensive. Meat, especially like beef, is going to get real expensive. And what the government's is working on destroying beef right now, and in multiple different ways, and they're leaning in there, and the whole,
that's like the evilest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
Yeah.
They're basically working on destroying beef right now. There is, you can't move cows in, I think, 6 or 7 states. You can't move them across lines because they found bird flu that they're saying has jumped to cattle. And
which is interesting. It's weird to me that bird flu is jumping to cattle.
Did that start? When did they start saying that?
A few weeks ago.
Yeah,
actually.
I've been saying it for a few weeks. And as soon as I heard him talk about this, I just looked at the market report again for New Holland, Pennsylvania, which is a big livestock auction at the New Holland Stockyards sale stable. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday is huge livestock auctions. They have usually on Mondays they have four auctioneers going at once. I think they have five different auction barns there. There's a big hay auction. It's a pretty awesome place to check out. Anyways, heifer calves that were of the beef breed, day old calves, are still almost $1,000 a head. The bull calves, the heifer bull calves, are down a little bit this week, but for like the past 5 weeks, they've been over $800, and some of them have cracked $1,000. Now, these are for 1 day old calves. They're just born and then brought to the auction. Mm. And
aren't they worth the most when they're 1 day old?
Well, no.
Or no.
No, not well, the most per pound, yeah, basically. Mm. But they're, oh, I'm saying like these 9,500 pound calves are bringing nearly $1,000 if they look like a beef breed. And all these just got to look like it. They don't even have to be. But usually a beef breed, you know, so that's like it'll be like a half Angus or a whole Angus or a Hereford or one of these things. But now they've also, I guess, shut down, and this is Steve Poplar at Poplar Report. He's a guy I listen to on YouTube. He reported that they've shut down the USDA inspectors in a whole bunch of states at these slaughterhouses.
Is that just going to slow things down for the people getting the meat out?
Well, at USDA facilities. And so he was a little vague. He didn't, you know, if you listen to his report, it kind of sounds like it's the whole country, but it's not the whole country. I called a USDA slaughterhouse today, and then they're like, oh, our inspectors are still here. And, you know, it's one in Massachusetts I do business with. And they're like, yeah, we've been hearing about this, you know, bird flu going over to cattle.
Sounds made up, man.
And even the guy I talked to at the slaughterhouse, he goes, we know it's all BS, just like COVID. well,
interesting.
People who work in the slaughter industry and own like small slaughterhouses and have, you know, are multiple generation farmers and have been getting dirty their whole life. People who work construction, people who have real jobs, people like, you know, where it takes real men to get things done. They're pretty much aware of what's going on. And for the most part, you're not pulling a wool over their eyes. And they, you know, unless they're like working directly for the federal government or state government, they hate the government because of all the regulations and all the nonsense. And the thing is, you know, big business like Tyson and Purdue and, you know, those kind of guys, they don't want small family farms. They don't want small family butcher shops.
Of course, they compete with their bottom line.
Right. So this, you know, this bird flu going over to cows narrative that they're pushing now or trying to push, you know, is going to just basically put a lot of little guys out of business in places where they let them get put, you know, where they let them do that. Luckily, here in New Hampshire, we got a whole pretty good black market of guys who will butcher cows and pigs right in their backyard.
It's scary and annoying how they, the parasite class, the despots and tyrants, they have discovered this really great play for their playbook of making something a public health crisis, and then they get to do whatever they want.
Right.
Which was
It's easy to have a public health crisis because you can scare the most amount of people with a public health crisis. And when you scare enough people, they're easily controlled because people, when they're afraid, want someone in authority to tell them how to resolve that fear.
And I want to throw this out there. I'm not a member of the public. The term public, when I look at it, it means to me a private cult religion. Is basically what it is. And you know, this idea of that, you know, of public, I, you know, is everyone who's in the public belongs to this, basically this private religion, from what I can tell.
It's absurd to think that you're just in it. Just collectivism is absurd. But Jet, I know you have a lot of things to say about this conversation here. What's on your mind, Jet?
Well, I wish I could bring a more intellectual or a higher intellectual topic to the table, but the reason I'm calling in tonight is because there's a panel. The three of you, I believe, are more, I guess, siding with my perspective on how we use terms when referring to, you know, these parasites and other things.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe 15 years ago that I first felt enlightened about the fact that when we use certain terms, they generate certain psychological responses within ourselves and with other people we talk to.
Right.
And I have since then told everyone, please govern because it doesn't exist. They're only groups and gangs of people willing to do harm against you if you don't.
It broke up a little bit. I just want to clarify for the listeners what you said. You said, please don't use the word government, right?
Yeah, but I've come to model that a little bit over the years. You know, that wall of terms, I think I sent in, like I said, maybe 15 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that I thought I'd probably persuade you guys into is to use the term government, if you will, only as an adjective. So when you're referring to something that is within these gangs and groups, if you want to use the word government, it might be easier for you to lead it as an adjective, you know, government goons,
right?
City, county, state, whatever.
I don't always remember, but I do think it's a very, very good tool for us to explain things to people. It does give them a psychological response in their head. They're like, wow. It immediately
city gang.
Conveys something. Right, right.
City parasites.
It immediately conveys something to someone, even if they've never thought of these things this way.
Well, yeah, the whole concept, I think Jay brought to the table, you know, more or less the parasite thing. I included that, but to be able to elaborate on that, the fact is they are extracting the blood of the people to be able to support their own nonsense. I mean, there's so much corruption in every level of this thing, these groups and gangs. It's just amazing if anybody looks into it. I mean, money, somebody gets into a certain position. I read recently about how their daughter at age 22 decided to create a nonprofit organization, and the person in charge of this one area just kind of funneled about $3 million into that brand new, you know, nonprofit thing. So he essentially instantly made a millionaire of his daughter. Now, one of the goon things that's kind of interesting happening today is, I don't know if you can heard about that fellow out in Indiana, Officer Schimmel or Shizzle, whatever his name is.
Oh, no. So Indiana, there was a cop and what happened with him?
Well, he pulled over this 18-year-old girl and she cracked her window down about 2 inches. He got real irate about that. And at some point, you know, lost his, I think it was about a minute and a half into it, he lost his thing, opened the door, pulled her out, slammed her face down onto the cement. And this is one of the fastest situations where he was actually fired here this last week or whatever it was.
Wow.
This happened in January, so about 3 months. They finally, I mean, initially the city council supported his action as proper and procedural, that kind of nonsense. But anyone could tell by all the cameras, the gas station camera and his car dash cam, that it was just over the top. I mean, she didn't break anything. She didn't get cut up or anything like that. But still, this is what's really fun about YouTube and all that, where we can get the word around and we can eliminate these goons, these crazy people who dress up in uniform and then just go out and constantly abuse everybody else under the guise and under the of wanting to serve you, serve the blank out of you is what it comes out. Have you seen that meme?
No, but I get it. Yeah, the government, I mean, the police cars have to protect and serve on the side of them, so, yeah.
Oh, this particular police force had blue line across the police on their car. They had blue line on their badges. Hmm. They had a Punisher badge.
Oh my goodness!
On.
Wow.
So that's a skull icon, and it represents this movie called The Punisher, where there's a guy that you know, he goes and he does vigilante justice, and tons of cops love this guy. It's so obvious that they think of themselves as you know, like they're like a superhero. They have to go after the bad guys. It's really weird, honestly.
It's kind of gross. It's like they're trying to justify their own actions.
They are
violent.
Like the Uvalde, the Uvalde, Texas cops that wouldn't go save the children's lives during that shooting in the elementary school. There was videos of this one guy that was standing there on his phone in the hallway while the shooting was happening. And not, you know, helping him. By this one guy, I mean a police officer. And it shows his phone, and his background on his phone is the Punisher. That's his, like, background. Well, I pulled up this article about the police officer. I'm glad this guy got fired. It's kind of a bit surprising because, although it is absolutely ridiculous that he has her on the ground, this, like, small teenage girl who... clearly, you know, doesn't have the ability to fight back. He put her on the ground, handcuffed her, picked her up by one arm, and that can't be good. Not can't possibly feel good, you know. But I'm just honestly surprised that this one guy got fired. It's just like this is absolutely bad what he did, but it's just kind of surprising because honestly, this is pretty normal for what cops do all around the country.
So probably what this cop will do. There's a cop, and a bunch of cops are doing this. Is actually I had talked about a couple of weeks ago, a correctional officer at this Sununu Youth Center did this. What this cop will do is he'll sue the city or the town or the state for, say he has PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome from all of the harassment he's received.
Wow.
And then he'll get a settlement from basically the state or the city or whoever. And then they'll probably be in this settlement. He'll be immune from prosecution. Which they're all pretty much immune from prosecution anyways with the, you know, qualified immunity nonsense that should not exist.
Shouldn't.
That's another thing that attracts bad actors is qualified immunity.
Not having to face up any repercussions for their bad acting. Yep. Well, thank you for the call, Jay. I do definitely try to remember. I think I've been doing it pretty often recently where I start talking about the
tyrants.
Government people.
Yeah.
And then I start calling them tyrants. And my favorite one is parasites. It's just like
it rolls off the tongue, and it definitely explains who these tyrants, despots, thieves, vermin are.
Vermin. 603-283-6160 is the phone number if you want to get in on the conversation with us. We do have someone on the line holding, and we will get to you guys' calls in the next segment. 603-283-6160 is the phone number. It's Free Talk Live. Don't go anywhere. More coming up on Free Talk Live.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom.
We have been enslaved for all our lives.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass.
The next ones, they will.
Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Authority to
Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there is no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website, forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. Party. And with you on Free Talk Live tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Jay,
and Riley.
And it was good to hear from the caller in the last segment about a cop that got actually fired from public outcry over an arrest he made of a teenage girl throwing
her on
the ground.
That's good news for sure.
Definitely good news. We have a caller on the line, David, in New Mexico. David, what's on your mind?
Hey, Triple B, how's it going tonight?
Why am I Triple B?
Oh, ball busting Bonnie.
Oh, okay. It's going fine. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, there is a 4B version of that one too, but I'm in a good mood tonight, so I won't go into that.
I almost think I know, but
yeah, it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy, and you guys are exceptionally smart. You know, as your previous caller had said. So,
oh, he said that our listeners are exceptionally smart, and we agreed with that.
Well, don't you listen to your own program?
I guess I listen to those people, like Jay and Riley talk to me here, so I'm listening to them.
There you go. All right. So I did happen to note that you spent some time just a moment ago talking about cows, beef cows and calves, bull calves, heifer calves, well, you know, quite in detail. You know, we were talking about chicken, Tyson and Purdue and all this agricultural livestock stuff.
Yeah, because so there's something going on.
Huh?
Because there's news about it, you know?
Well, there's news about horses, too.
You mean horses?
Yeah, well, of course. So what do you think it said?
Well, I knew you said horse, but I don't think the listeners did.
Oh, okay. Well, they know now. So, you know, you had criticized me. I mean, first of all, I mean, it's kind of a slap in the face, Triple B, when you spend all this time talking about other livestock and then you discriminate against specific livestock. I don't think that's fair, 14th Amendment at all, you know.
Well, technically in California, horses are not livestock. Hmm. So because it's illegal in California to slaughter a horse for consumption.
That's dumb.
So what happened is a bunch of these farms in California that were livestock operations, breeding farms, horse farms, racing stables, whatever, pleasure stables, they had all these agricultural exemptions. So when they did the thing where they banned that you couldn't eat a horse, basically in California, they're no longer livestock. They're now pets. So all this horse industry took a major beating about a decade ago, I guess it was about a decade ago or so, because people had these horse farms that, you know, paid agricultural type tax rate, which let's say it was $5,000 a year for your horse farm because it's agricultural. And now that it's not agricultural, it's, just a pet, a horse, it's not livestock. Then it goes to be some kind of commercial tax rate, which turned some of these places into having $50,000, $60,000 a year property taxes when they had a few thousand dollar a year property taxes.
Whoa.
Put them right out of business.
That's so terrible.
The real uber wealthy ones didn't go out of business, you know, where all the politicians send their wives and their daughters to go ride their horses and the owners of prisons and, you know.
Of course not. The politicians like to keep their favorite horse.
Oh, yeah.
People and money.
Those are the guys buying $100,000 ponies for their kids and stuff. But yeah, so they aren't livestock there, but maybe in Arizona they stare. And it's just not it's just not hip to eat horses. In American culture.
I don't like the idea. It's so funny because in the break Jay was actually talking about, I showed him a picture of a Shetland pony my dad saw today when he was driving, and I was like, look,
Shetland pony.
Well,
shouldn't you say Crapland?
No, I'm not saying what you think I'm saying. But he looked chubby to me is what I was going to say. Whoa, you almost made me accidentally cuss just now. What the heck? But he looked chubby to me, and he was really cute. But Jay was telling me they get even fatter and that people will eat them. And
So what it is when ponies can live a very long old age.
Hmm.
And what happens with some of these ponies at the auction, ponies can live to be 30, 40 years old pretty easy to where a full-size horse, you don't see many of them make it to 30.
Hmm.
And so you'll see this old pony, and when it goes that has a bunch of cellulite, it looks all over it, it's real chunky around the top of its butt, around its shoulders, around its ears, its neck is real chunky. And that will do what's called JAP, J-A-P. And those ponies will bring a lot of money because they have so much fat on them that fat, when they process that pony, they take that fat and they basically scrape it off the meat. And then after they cut the meat, they inject the fat back into the meat and they use that as imitation whale meat. So they have these feedlots up in Canada where they'll take.
Of course, the Jap is eaten by people who eat whales like in Japan.
Right.
Is that where they call it that?
You'll be at the auction and the Amish guy will say, boys, I guarantee this one will go Jap. It's just what he says, because you're looking at it and you really can't confirm it. And there's always like two or three different guys, you know, buying for the slaughterhouses, and then they ship them up to Canada because the animal rights wackos got rid of the slaughterhouses in the United States. So now the horses got to make like a 20-hour ride to Canada from or wherever from these places that they're, you know, sold at to get slaughtered. And what they did is they just cut the funding for the USDA, the beef inspector or the meat inspectors at the horse slaughter facilities. So, and I think horse slaughter is going to come back here pretty quick, because just all this horse meat that is just they kill the horse and they throw it in a hole. And a lot, and there could be a second use for a lot of these, but it's just not popular in American or, you know, English culture.
Why would the government of California, the government parasite people, think that it makes sense to ban it, though? Like, if somebody wants to.
They banned it in Massachusetts also. because.
They should be allowed to.
Because these animal rights, you know, activists, you know, scream, you know, bloody murder, and the politicians listen.
That's so weird. I mean, there's no logical reason to ban that and not ban eating cows.
Right, right. It's weird. I mean, horses are companions or pets, and yeah, we're very close to them.
Cows are too. They're sweet and smart and cute.
Not compared to a horse.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, probably.
I have eaten a horse, not all in one sitting, but I have eaten a horse. And so, Jay, now when they send these horses to Canada, that's where they go to play hockey, right? Horse hockey?
No, they go to be turned into glue.
Well, that's horse hockey. They don't make glue out of horses. They make burgers and
do they
steaks
still make
and stuff.
Glue out of horses?
Probably not. But there's so the hooves on a horse. You know, the gelatin in the hooves and the gelatin on the ends of the bones.
Jell-O brand.
You know, it's actually very good for your for you know, humans to consume and
for your cartilage
and your nails.
Yeah, skin
hair.
And nails
and so you know, I don't know where the glue factory thing came from, but this
came from Elmer the Bull.
Elmer the Bull.
Oh, so that was never a thing? They never made glue out of horses? I always thought they did.
Yeah, it was a thing. Yes, it was. They make glue from hides, I believe.
Possibly. Yeah, there's all kinds of good byproducts that come out of them. But the thing is the U.S. used to export a lot of horse meat to Europe in Massachusetts, Connecticut, Long Island, New Jersey. There was all kinds of horse processing plants. It was a huge business, and these horses, you know, they when you were done with them, you sent them to an auction, and there was and probably a good chance a killer buyer bought them, and you know, it went and it fed a family somewhere. It went and fed a lot of families, actually.
It seems almost less respectful to the animal to like not be allowed to do anything when it's going to die anyway. It's like what you're saying. It's just going to end up in a hole.
So what happened is they've really put a big kibosh on the whale harvesting in industry with the Japanese folks. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, been out harvesting these whales for, you know, decades, you know, thousands of years. And so when they put the so that's like really difficult for them to do, from what I understand. I don't know if it's illegal yet, but it's very hard for them to do. So it put a huge demand on this imitation whale meat. So now they got these feedlots up in Canada where they'll bring like horses of any kind and they'll literally just feed them like rejected candy. Like they don't even take the plastic wrappers off the Jolly Ranchers and the horses just eat it and they just pass the plastic or whatever. and then they feed them just so much like starch. And a lot of these, and a lot of what they were buying was these Premarin foals. Premarin is a hormone that you get from a pregnant mare's urine to like make birth control pills and like, you know, do things like that. So they got these Premarin farms up in Canada. I don't think they're in the U.S. anymore. There was some in the U.S. years ago.
And the thing about it is they don't get estrogen that way anymore. That was something that they tried to do, but it cost so much money that I'm that they found other ways to get this synthetic estrogen.
Now it's a synthetic one that they use.
So I would be, I make sense to me that if they still have people getting it out, like they want to use it for something else.
Well, so there are still are some Premarin farms, but a lot of them have gone away because of the synthetic a hormone replacing that. But what they would do is I knew guys that used to buy these Premarin foals, and they would be usually out of like draft horses. So they'd be like a Belgian or Clydesdale or Percheron type mares, because they wanted the big horses because they want them to pee a lot and they want them to make a lot of this, you know, hormone. And then they would drop these foals, and then the foals would go, you know, on a marketplace, or they would, you know, they would keep the females to raise to make more Premarin, you know, so they could keep on breeding them. But a lot of the gelding, a lot of the colts, they'd be out there to buy. So these guys would buy them, and they'd basically feed them like tons of starch and candy and, you know, very high sugar. And by the time they were like 2.5, 3 years old, they would be have this kind of like fat on them, so they could would be available for the imitation whale meat market. And but like these horses wouldn't live much longer than that because
that is really sad. It's just like they're fattening them up for slaughter.
Exactly.
So this
what
sounds a lot worse than eating a whale, in my opinion. Like if the government somewhere wasn't stopping the Japanese people from eating the whales, well then this market for fat, like torturing these horses before eating them, wouldn't be there.
Right.
That's just one of the thing that these things that these parasites do. The government people, the parasites do. They act like they're fixing some problem in the world, and usually it just ends up making things worse. Well, thank you for the call, David. I didn't want to have Jeremy holding too long. He's calling from Australia. Jeremy, from Australia, what's on your mind?
Hello, I'm calling in again as the TikTok correspondent.
Thank you for that.
And thank you. By the way, the followers are up to 8,211, still trying to get to 10,000 so we can stream 24/7.
On TikTok, and we're at Free Talk Live on there.
I've never been on TikTok before.
So, a few weeks ago, you were calling, and you know, I'm sure this isn't an uncommon occurrence, but Bonnie, you were calling cops pigs, and then some of the co-hosts said that's not fair to pigs to compare them to cops.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned that you thought cops everywhere were pretty much, you know, that kind of bad person or whatever, like not all cops but cops everywhere. And someone brought up a point that I thought was pretty her name's Tupu. She says, don't compare American cops to other cops out there. Whoops. Ah.
So don't compare.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Don't compare American cops to other cops out there. Honestly, imagine a world full of American cops. It would be like Gotham City out there. I thought that was a very good point, because stereotypically, American cops are some of the worst. Maybe other third world, some other third world countries as well. But
well, I don't know. I don't really think much about cops outside of the United States. So I'm not saying I didn't, but I just don't remember making a comment. Like, I would want to know what exactly I said to explain myself. But one thing I will say is that
you weren't comparing them to cops in other countries. You just mentioned cops everywhere. Probably not necessarily thinking about the fact that cops might be different in other countries.
Well, I want to say is that during the lockdowns all over the world, that's pretty much proof that they're bad everywhere. Like, there weren't very many countries where they were good. I mean, like, the cops in China locking people down into their apartment complexes, the cops in Australia even not letting
Canada,
people
New Zealand
go from city to city. You know, you're getting a text on your phone or cops will show up if you're not at your house in some places in Australia.
Yeah, it is interesting because Melbourne was supposedly, some people said it was the most locked down city in the world, where I'm kind of like, well, what about the cities in China that were like people are literally locked in the houses. Yeah. But
I hear that a lot.
Where I live in Australia, I didn't see any of that, and people were ignoring it a lot and stuff like that.
Were you rural?
Yeah. But I'm near the sixth largest city in Australia, but about an hour out of it. So.
And see, that's kind of like what a pattern that happens everywhere is like the, like when I kept hearing people say, oh, Texas isn't even locked down. It's totally free in Texas. And I would be like, what are they talking about? Because I lived in the city of San Antonio, like in right in the middle of it in 2020. And it was like a police state. It was, you'd have to walk past police officers to go into Walmart and they'd be like, you got to wear your mask, got pulled up over your mouth and your nose. And, you know, it was really locked down. Everybody was obeying. But then people were talking about the rural areas in Texas saying like, oh, nobody cares about it here. So it just seems like.
And I guess. Well, sorry, rural areas don't really have cops. There's like state troopers on the highway or whatever. But
yeah, some don't.
Rural areas are better places because they don't have cops.
Yeah.
Well, there's just a huge culture divide between, you know, urban, city urban liberal types versus, you know, rural conservative Americans. And it doesn't matter if you're in New Hampshire, Florida, Texas, or New York, you know, these places are, you know, very different places. But, you know, like Concord and Manchester, New Hampshire are very, very blue cities. You know, the cops are, you know, all, you know, very much have the woke mind virus. They're all about, you know, the whole, you know, wokeism thing, and
they're all about big government. They want the government to take care of everybody,
and they're all about cracking down on and you know, going against anybody who is like of a who isn't of the woke narrative, who isn't of, you know, the leftists, you know whatever, you know, they're pushing. And so, but this is pretty much all the cities everywhere. And, you know, even like Colorado is becoming just as bad as California and New York. But in rural Colorado, like, nobody sees this stuff. Where I was in Colorado, you know, it was, you know, the town I was in, you know, cattle, you know, outnumber people probably 10,000 to one.
And one thing I would like to say, just to answer, to go back to the TikToker's comment, is that I don't really look around the world and see freedom exactly. Whether it's, you know, jackbooted thugs knocking down people's doors, or people just like generally complying with the parasite class in their country because it just like is their culture to do so. Like, I don't see, you know, like, oh, everybody everywhere else in the world is free except for the United States. Like, honestly, she said it would be like Gotham City. Kind of is. I mean, it's kind of that way.
I was going to say that it may be that it's down to compliance, but like stories like George Floyd and what's his name, Rodney King from way back in the day, and, you know, stories like that I usually hear in America. Maybe it's because I am originally from America, so I pay more attention listening to things like Free Talk Live based in America.
And I would obviously never argue that the cops
Tiananmen
here
Square, there was
good.
Yeah, obviously Tiananmen Square in China was a huge thing, so obviously they have a police state there.
You know where I thought the cops.
Yeah, it might be more compliance that means less of the violent.
There was
sort
a cop that
beating people up things.
There was a cop that ran a lady in a wheelchair over in with his horse during the Ottawa truckers protest and all kinds of other things that they did to those people.
The best cops I interacted with were the ones in Acapulco, Mexico, when I was in Acapulco, Bonneville, right where the Anarchapulco event happens, for basically like 15 days this winter. And they have the local chief of police. I actually talked to him for a few minutes. His English was pretty all right. And at the opening ceremonies, Jeff Berwick is on stage, you know, the Dollar Vigilante, and he's talking about, you know, Mexico, and he really pimps out Mexico and why you should be in Mexico. And, you know, he really thinks that, and he's right, that the states are a very dangerous place to be, especially the cities. I think New Hampshire is pretty much exempt from that because it's a small population, is very heavily armed. The rural people are quite independent. We have a really good parallel economy here that we're working on building. We got the Free State Project. We just got a whole bunch of awesome things happening in New Hampshire that I think sets us apart from a lot of the other states. But anyways, one thing that, so you have the police, and then you have the federale. So the local chief of police, Jeff Berwick, does his talk about how the chief of police agrees with everything that Jeff Berwick's talking about on his walk-in talks. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He does. He's Jeff and Lucy, but Lucy just died.
Oh, my God. I didn't hear that.
Walk-in talks, yeah.
His chihuahua.
Yeah. Whoa,
that's going to be really hard for him.
Yeah. It's been tough on him. If you listen to the last episodes of his, his walk-in talk he does. But anyways, he ends up talking about how, like, the chief of police agrees with us. He knows everything's corrupt. He likes what we're doing. He likes that the event is in Acapulco. It's really good for the community. And I talked to chief of police, and he's like, yeah, I like freedom. And then you have the federales. Well, these federales, you got like a dozen guys riding around in like a crew cab Chevy pickup truck. You know, they got AR-15s or M4s or whatever. Each of them's got like a, 15, 16, 30 round magazines on them. Plus they get a lot more, like they're ready to rock and roll. And these guys are cruising around all over the place. And they were so cool, those guys. I go talk to them, and like my son's, all happy about the big guns they got and giving them high fives. And they're talking to my, daughter and, my kids. And the cops were really nice in Mexico, I must say.
603-283-6160. Thank you so much for the call, Jeremy. And everyone can follow us at Free Talk Live on TikTok. More Free Talk Live coming up. 603-283-6160. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number. That's 603-283-6160. Are you tired of the oppressive rules and moderation of the big tech social media sites? Our Mastodon server at social.freetalklive.com can set you free. Mastodon is free, open source, decentralized, and federated. Multiple apps are available for iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, and Linux. Social.freetalklive.com. And with you on Free Talk Live tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay.
And Riley.
And it looks like we have a caller on the line. So, unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Forget government censorship. I hate Free Talk Live censorship.
Oh, then have a nice day. We were going to talk about this from nhjournal.com. This article says, harassed for declining to fly LGBTQ flag. Goffstown barber gets no trespass order for activists. And this is a article Jay brought in, and it's pretty honestly kind of entertaining in a way. There's this activist going around apparently harassing business owners if they won't put up the rainbow LGBTQ flag that also has that little rectangle in it, I'm sure, not just the regular nice looking rainbow one, but the one that like represents Marxism.
And there's like a whole, like there's a triangle in there to represent like child pedophilia. I listened to a whole thing the other day, as I was working it, popped up, but it was a guy was explaining all the symbology within the LGBTQ flag with the little triangle thing in it. He went into it and like the idea is that it's like the colors is like that blue color represents like baby blue. Really sick stuff. But yeah, this place is called Alpha's Barber Shop, and the owner is Chris Pruner of Goffstown, New Hampshire. And this, I'm in a local Signal chat, and this pops up the other day. And this is, I've been hearing about this woman. Her name is in the article. I forget what her name is.
They did or didn't put the name in the...
Her name is in the article if you read down a little bit.
It says, I don't see it yet, so it'll be in here, but... I'm seeing the name of the barbershop, but we'll read it and I'll pull it up. It's just, it's not jumping out at me.
Annie Boyer, I believe is her name.
Oh, is this it? Chair Kelly Ann Boyer.
Yep.
Okay.
And well, she's part of this group. I don't know if it's the exact woman, but they're going around and you know, and harassing people. But what was interesting is, as soon as a whole bunch of people in this signal group, they're like, "Oh, I'm gonna go get my hair cut. I usually have my wife cut my hair." Or one woman's like, "I'm bringing all my kids to get their hair cut, and I usually cut their hair." So it looks like locally there's a lot of support for this guy. I'm thinking about going and getting my beard trimmed there in a couple of days. I need to do that, and usually I just do it myself. But you know, this is great that this guy's, you know, standing up against this, you know, mental illness called wokeism.
I think it's also just a story about, you know, private property and the idea that somebody can just come and harass you on your property to promote the ideas that she cares about that you don't care about is ridiculous. So I also do think that it's important to support small businesses in your town if you know that the woke mob is going to go after them, because that's kind of a real thing. So let's get into the story. It says, "You're part of the problem. That's what an LGBTQ activist told Alpha's Barbershop owner, Chris Prunier of Goffstown." Maybe it's like Prunier or something, but this is America, so no, I'm just kidding. Prunier, that's probably how I'm going to have to say it. So, of Goffstown, New Hampshire. And this activist stomped out of his business angry that he declined to fly a gay pride flag at his business.
Well, it is his right to fly whatever flag he wants. And if he doesn't want to fly a gay pride flag, it's his right. It's his business. It's his property.
I'm honestly surprised that they're calling this flag the gay pride flag anyway, because that is not the gay pride flag anymore. The LGBTQIA2-S pride flag. That is not just like the regular gay pride flag, like the regular rainbow. That so much nicer looking, and it didn't have all this agenda attached.
Definitely all the gay people I know, personally know, are not of this woke garbage, whole...
I'm sure a lot of them aren't, because they feel like their movement has been hijacked by a bunch of crazy people.
It's been hijacked by a bunch of pedophiles. That's like really, you know, when they start... Arya was really upset about this, you know, trying to include, you know, MAPS, minor attracted people, as being a protected class under this, you know, same like, you know, acronym, whatever.
Yeah, I also know that
add them to it.
I've also heard Arya mention on Free Talk Live that she's not a fan of the Gay Pride Month or whatever, because what's there to be proud about? Homosexuality or whatever. It's like,
just like, what's there to be proud about the way you were born?
Yeah,
like I'm not proud to be white any more than I'm, you know, like. Just, you know, just like, oh, that's a thing. Like,
and
it's fine.
For listeners who don't know, Arya is a trans woman. So I think she has a little more credibility than I do.
Right. So it's just like, I'm not proud to be a straight white woman. It's just things that I am. Like, yeah. So I do think Pride Month is fun, and there's lots of fun things that happen from it. So it's not like I like hate it, but I can understand being like somebody that falls under that category and then being annoyed with the way that it gets talked about every year. I like how just like things come, like celebrations pop out of it. It's like celebrating things is always better than, you know, just like people out there complaining, you know, like people at this point, they're just kind of celebrating what has been done for the most part. At every gay pride parade I've been to, it's mostly like celebrating the fact that, like, there is more, you know, not because of the government, but I think because of the way that society has changed its viewpoints. Like, there's just more, you know, freedom to be had for gay people than there was in, like, the 80s when you just get beat up for being gay or whatever.
Sure.
And my dad talks about that. So I'm like, you know, I don't think it's just, like, 0% true. And my great aunt is a lesbian, and she's, like, 80-something. And even in California, she talks about how it used to be not okay when she was like a very young person and she was lesbian. So it definitely like society has changed and people are celebrating that. Like, there's nothing really wrong with it. But I do understand where Arya is coming from, of the idea that, like, what's there to be proud of? Something that you just were born with. It's not an accomplishment. So, Sarah in New Mexico, you're on Free Talk Live. It is a free, is an open phones show. So what's on your mind, Sarah?
Oh, yeah. I just want to say that I'm so happy to see they're getting rid of all of the advertisements and commercials from our buses and hopefully to the bus stops also.
That's terrible. That's a terrible thing to be happy about. That just means it's going to cost the taxpayers more. Why would you be happy about that?
Yeah.
Sorry, Sarah.
Well, you know, they're torturing us by looking at all these ugly advertisements on all the buses.
That's just an opinion. You know, maybe I feel tortured from looking at the homeless people. Maybe I feel tortured from looking at the buses. I don't. I'm just saying.
I feel tortured from paying the taxes to support those buses.
I can't believe that there's a voluntary way to support these buses and that people are getting rid of it just because they think that the advertisements are ugly. That's absolutely crazy.
Well, it costs more money because people get fed up. People get mad of looking at it and they tear up the bus stop for the advertisements on it. I beat it up myself. You know what I mean? I got tired of looking at ugly lawyers' faces. I hear their commercials on the TV.
Is illegal.
And, you know, I got tired of it and kicked it myself. You know, everybody tears it all up because we're all sick and tired of looking at all these ugly people.
You're making it uglier by tearing it up.
I bet whatever they replace it with, like, what are they going to do? Put pictures of, like, you know, lions, bears, and tigers, and
no, they're going to do animals, politician pictures.
You know, rainbows, whatever. It's gonna get vandalized. Whatever they put up,
that's a good point. It'll probably just keep getting vandalized because it just has more to do with the
culture
type
of
people,
the people
right,
that are
of Albuquerque
living on the streets. You know, the fact that, you know, all the Native American people around Albuquerque are basically destined to be straight up alcoholics because when they're 18 or 20 years old, the U.S. government gives them $25,000 to go kill themselves with.
That's frightening.
Yeah, because
it's really
just
bad.
And
the way,
you know,
the welfare has degraded the culture and of those people and everyone
on
welfare.
I shouldn't say all of, but just I got lots of Native American friends that, like, so many of their family has been destroyed, basically because these kids get this big chunk of, you know, whatever from the government.
Well, I guess when you commit genocide against a group of people, then give them money, it does treat, it just makes them into slaves,
right,
system that, well,
and
oppress them.
And that's the whole
that's
point.
That's so true.
That's the whole point of welfare. Just
right,
all
right,
the
for
people,
everyone.
All the people living in the drug encampments, the only reason they can afford to do their opiates every single day is because they are on welfare and don't have to live anywhere and don't have to pay any rent. They're just living in a tent. They're selling their food stamps. They're, you know, getting whatever cash they're getting, they're turning it into, you know, they're buying the drugs with it, and they're content like that. And yet they keep on voting for more money. So whether you are an active, you know, producing participant of society, or you're a crackhead down on Main Street, you know, sleeping in a cardboard box and, you know, doing drugs every day, your vote counts the same. And yeah, and you know darn well all those people, you know, the ACORN and those organizations are going to the drug encampments, and they're like, hey, you know, you want to make sure you get your services from the city, you know, just vote all Democrat or vote whatever.
Bussing them there too,
or even, well, they only have to bus them; they just bring them the mail, they just bring them the ballots, and then these guys, it's called ballot harvesting. They'd go with, you know, hundreds of ballots to the drug encampments and have everybody, you know, vote and sign a ballot.
Whoa.
And go to nursing homes, you know, go to these, you know, tenement building blocks where, you know, you got thousands of people in one building, for example. You know, you can cover a lot of ground doing some ballot harvesting. And this is why all the urban cities, all the urban areas vote, you know, very Democrat and blue.
I totally agree that giving people welfare, it may seem counterintuitive, but giving people welfare is enslaving them. It's giving them no incentive to be independent of the government. So it's the same thing as enslaving them.
Then they incentivize poverty by not allowing you, if you're working, to have savings.
Right.
Over $2,000.
And tons of other things like that. You just get incentivized to stay just floating along, you know, like making enough money with welfare, but not doing any better for yourself or your family. And
people get very comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
I know so many people that as soon as they got that disability check, or these single moms get on the dole, their whole mentality changes. It's no longer about improving themselves, making their situation better. It's about how can I maintain this lifestyle where I don't have to go do anything. I can just keep on getting paid.
I've seen it too. It definitely seems like that. Well, thank you for the call, Sarah. I think that's pretty immoral of you to destroy the property of these people that are advertising on the buses.
I mean, I realize that sometimes advertisements can be annoying, but
yeah.
Destroying property is a little.
And the other part about it is just the sus. And the other part about it is just the idea of this could be paid for. The services could be paid for in a way that's voluntary. And Sarah's just like, nope, not good enough for me. I need to steal it from my neighbors. That is so bad.
There is so much corruption in a public transit thing. My cousin worked for Springfield Pioneer Valley Transit Authority, Springfield, Massachusetts, and. Now he's working for a private company. You know, he's a CDL guy, and he's a very high skilled, very ambitious, and a smart guy. He's finally getting paid his value. But being a city bus driver was like the most horrible thing he ever had to do. And he finally got out of it a few years ago. But for example, got federal grant money from the Department of Transport or HUD or something to buy some of these fully electric transit buses, and they were like $1.2 million, $1.3 million per bus.
Wow.
And they're just constantly problematic, and then all these and they got like three times the amount of buses they actually need to like run the outfit, but because the new buses with the diesel emissions are so troublesome and so unreliable that they have like triple the amount of buses. But they can't even keep all the routes going because everything's just so unreliable, and like the mechanics are like just they're paying their mechanics like crazy money just to stay there because it's just ludicrous, you know, the way that they're working. And everybody who works in this operation, Pioneer Valley Transit Authority, according to my cousin, they are all very, very aware. With it's just a black hole of money, like insane amounts of money with the situation, and every government program's like that. This is why everything's
You're
going broke. I was listening to something on YouTube, and Forbes magazine pops up a lot, and it's basically like C-SPAN, and this representative, he's like, see this bag here, and he holds up a bag of bushings. These cost $90,000 to the U.S. taxpayer. He goes, but as a private citizen, you can go buy this bag of bushings for like $33 or something, you know, but it's $90,000 because it's something being pushed by Boeing or Raytheon or, you know, one of these, you know, for defense contracting. This is why the United States is spending nearly $1 trillion a year in defense.
It's all making a slush fund.
Yeah.
For everybody else.
Make that Spendex, suck that Spendex dry. Every quarter, so it gets replenished and keep on asking for more. Like, that's the whole agenda with the military, with the military spending.
So, another group of people like the government who gang together against other people who they want to get on their team and say, if you're not with us, you're against us. The government does that, but also the woke mob does that. So, sounds really funny coming from me to say that. But it is honestly true. These people who want you to think a certain way, believe a certain way, or, you're canceled. It's really annoying. Like, even, like, in my life, I get annoyed with, like, people saying if you're a Lana Del Rey fan right now, you should be, quote-unquote, canceled because, like, they say she's a Zionist because she didn't, like, sign this Hollywood thing that said, we're against Israel. So like, it's just like the woke mob is always trying to cancel people. It's these ugly blue haired people who don't know real art most of the time. And this one went into this guy's barbershop, Alpha's Barbershop, in, I think you said it was Goffstown, New Hampshire.
Yep, just west of Manchester, New Hampshire.
And this activist. Actually, a select board vice chair, Kellyanne Boyer, went into his barbershop to say, you're part of the problem. And there was a confrontation where she stomped out of his business, angry that he declined to fly a gay pride flag at his business. And he didn't take the confrontation lightly. Instead, he chose to file a no trespassing order against the woman and four others he believes are in cahoots to stir up trouble in town. And one person named is that woman, the select board vice chair, Kellyanne Boyer. He said, "I'm fed up. I know the person who came into my shop is part of that crew. I feel like this was orchestrated. If you're not with them, you're against them." The conflict began 2 years ago. Prunier says Boyer's wife, Pamela, used to have her hair cut at his shop. Prunier and Boyer's wife shared differing views on politics, he said, adding that the banter the two shared at the time was respectful. That all changed 2 years ago when he turned down her request to fly a pro-LGBTQ plus flag outside his business. This is Prunier, says, "I told her I thought it would be controversial and potentially bad for my business." Which, yeah, that's not a bad thing to consider. Like, I once...
Yeah, I definitely will not go to businesses that fly those flags. Absolutely not.
Yeah, so that's definitely... Even if he wanted to fly the flag, like, I said something about flying a rainbow, like a regular rainbow flag outside of the Moose Mart when I worked there when it was going to be June. I was like, oh, yeah, you could do that, and maybe it'll bring in business. But he did some, like, surveying, and it turned out, like, it was... actually worse for business in Keener. Huh. Maybe he didn't do surveying, but he like asked the other business owners what they thought about that, and it actually would have had a negative effect.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Moose Mart is not really an ideal place if you ride a bicycle or walk.
It's different. And the old one,
because just where it was location was,
mm-hmm.
and you know the kind of people who are going to pander to that nonsense. You know, they're not really driving cars. They're mostly, you know, these kids who have, you know, fallen, succumbed to this mental illness of, you know, wokeism.
That's not a bad point. So at the old location, it's on a highway. So most people were like leaving Keene after working and going to live out like in Marlborough or like rural areas. So maybe it would have been worse there. But at their location now, they're right next to the college. So maybe I'll bring that up again and he can see if that's a better or worse thing. But the thing is, I just like the regular rainbow flag. That is, there's nothing wrong with that. It just means, and it's always meant to everyone who, knows this. I mean, to most people, they know this, that it means like everyone is accepted, like the rainbow, the full spectrum, blah, 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 like everyone being respected. And that always included straight people too, but it was about having, being not ashamed and not, scared to be openly gay in public. But, there's nothing wrong with that flag. And then they had to go and change it and put apparently like covert pedo symbols in it.
Yeah, that's the whole plus thing's about.
Yeah, what else would that be? What else is there? And the other thing that annoys a lot of people that I know that are gay is just like the whole plus thing is annoying because it's like, oh, so the people that believe that they were born an elephant or born in the wrong body, but really they're an elephant, or the same thing as just like me, a gay man who wants to have sex with other men. Like, that's not the same thing at all. Not me myself, but I'm just saying,
yeah, it's just,
for example,
are furries included in the LGBTQ plus agenda?
Yeah, I really
now?
Don't think they should.
Yeah.
So it says that he differed on views with this woman, Pamela, and she asked him to fly the flag outside his business. And he says, "I thought it'd be controversial and potentially bad for business," which is not a bad. I mean, it seems to be reasonable. She put up a large flag right next door to my shop anyway, so I took it down, rolled it up nicely, stowed it in the back of my store so they could come and take it back, and they proceeded to file a police report. Whoa. The block of Main Street that is home to Alpha's barber shop includes a dense stretch of other businesses sharing the same building-style storefront space. Prunier acknowledged that another business owner may have given the group permission to fly the flag, but said that the close proximity to his shop made him feel like he was being targeted. Well, if it's on someone else's property, he's basically doing the same thing that we're saying is a bad idea. But
yeah.
So I don't know whose property it's on. I guess that definitely depends. Maybe he should have talked to the person who...
And there's a very good chance that it was just on a public property area. Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm pretty familiar with this neighborhood you're talking about.
Yeah, like on the sidewalk, the public
area. Yeah, like right on the sidewalk or something. Or it could have been put on, you know, because there's like a church there flying a flag now, too. And I'm, you know, sure the church got all kinds of pressure. Hopefully the church gets, you know, a bunch of other pressure from, you know, the people who attended to be like, yeah, I'm not bringing my kids here because, you know, I need to, you know, shield them from this, you know, garbage that's going on.
He says that it says that it made him feel like he was being targeted, and he probably was because he just had that conversation with this woman. He says, we settled things and they got their flag back. She boycotted my shop and never came back. And she knows very well that I'm not okay with promoting this stuff at my business, which is why what happened last week was the last straw for me. He claims Lisa Harbus, who entered his shop last Wednesday as part of the same crew and intentionally wanted to start trouble. The security camera video, which has no audio, shows Harbus speaking to the barber for nearly 5 minutes as she cuts a customer's hair. As he cuts a customer's hair. I was like, what? Her gestures and demeanor appear more angry as the encounter continues. I'd be, you know, really annoyed if I was the one getting my hair cut there.
I would be too.
She seems to be causing, like, trouble with his customers and business. He said, she's kind of in my face and says, me and my wife can't walk down the street holding hands because of all the hate. That's just not true in New Hampshire. Like, that's just not true in 2024 in New Hampshire. He says, but I'm telling you, nobody has an issue with that in Goffstown. There's no hate like that here. We're tolerant.
Yeah.
It's right outside of Manchester. It's not like a super rural area. Not that I'm saying like people are hateful.
The conservatives are tolerant everywhere in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Because they are all armed. If they weren't tolerant, there would be mass shootings every day.
That's a good point. So it's been Free Talk Live. Thank you for listening. You can go to freetalklive.com. for more, and you can also check out jnoon.com. And thank you for listening. Peace.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the realtor, Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.